CityTalk 105.9 official podcasts. Online at citytalk.fm. Downtown Liverpool in business with Frank McKenna. CityTalk 105.9.
Hello and welcome to City Talk's Business with me, Frank McKenna. I'm the chairman of the Independent Private Sector Lobby Group and Business Networking Club Downtown Liverpool in Business. And every Sunday we look at issues affecting Liverpool and the wider Northwest region. This week's show is dominated by the business of politics as we review the Queen's speech, what was and wasn't in the coalition's legislative programme for the forthcoming year, and we reflect on the local election results which saw Liverpool elect its first mayor, and Merseyside councils for the first time ever are now all in Labour control. I'll also be looking at the perennial problem for businesses of access to finance. And with my studio guests this week, political commentator and downtown blogger, Jim Hancock, Andy Leach from the Northwest Fund, and star of stage, mayoral elections and TV, the Cushion King himself, Tony Caldera. Tony, good morning to you, sir.
Good morning, Frank.
Commiserations on the election result, which we'll touch upon later, but we'll forget that for a moment.
Thanks.
And focus on your debut as a television star. I tuned in last Tuesday to watch the programme. Fascinating programme, I have to say. But tell us how it came about.
Well, the programme's called The Town Taking on China, and we've had one part of a two-part series. The second part is coming up on Tuesday at 8pm on BBC Two. And it came about when the BBC got wind that we were actually looking to bring manufacturing jobs back to Merseyside, and they thought it was a fascinating story and a really good idea. They were looking for a company who was looking to make that kind of move, moving manufacturing from east to west rather than the usual way, which is from west to east. And when they came up and did what they call a screen test, and they had a little trial taster tape of the factory, and they had a look at some of the girls in the factory, and they thought that they were great characters, thought for some reason that I might be able to pull off a TV presenting role. And when they put it all together, they thought, what a great idea. And it's just gone from there and gone from strength to strength.
Yeah, I mean, we keep hearing about, you know, the booming China economy. But it's been interesting to talk to you over the last 12 months or so, because with all the advantages of boom come the challenges that, you know, probably business owners in this country are used to. So you're looking at inflation, you're looking at higher wage demands, and all of those sort of things combined made you review whether or not it was sensible for you to continue the big operation that you had over in China.
That's exactly right. And what you'll see on Tuesday in the concluding part of the documentary is how we actually face some of those challenges, how we decide which part of our operations to put into China and which part to put back here into Merseyside. And also you'll see how we get over the fact that Chinese prices are rising much more quickly than Western prices. And that's really interesting news for all manufacturers in this part of the world, because for those who have survived the first wave of globalization, where manufacturing has moved from West to East, all of a sudden the tide's turning, prices in the East are going up faster than prices in the West, and there is hope for manufacturers all across Merseyside and all across Britain.
Mm. Now, I take with all television programmes that there's got to be an element of drama and personal interest and all that sort of thing. But the serious underlying issue for me in terms of programme one was, as you're searching for people to work for you, so you're looking to add to your complement of staff, that issue of skill base and whether or not we've got the right people with the right work ethic came out loud and clear. Now, without wanting to give too much away in terms of what Tuesday's programme brings about, just in general terms, Tony, why do we still seem to have this issue of finding the right people, even for the jobs that are available? Because we've got, we're told, over 3.5 million unemployed now, and yet, even this week, almost every business I've spoken to has said, yeah, we've got vacancies, but we're really struggling to recruit the right people.
Well, what we found with Caldera, and especially during the filming of the documentary, was as we needed more staff in certain areas, we were absolutely inundated with applicants, for example, on the production line work on the warehouse work, some of the regular jobs that, with the greatest of respect to those people doing the jobs, don't need that much training. Where we struggled was in this very skilled job of the sewing machinists, and we couldn't find enough skilled sewing machinists. So what we've had to do, and I've got to be careful not to give too much away for a Tuesday night's programme, but we had to find ways to train people up, sometimes from scratch, sometimes to retrain them and give them that skill base. Because many people, and for a long time, most commentators in this country have thought that we would never get employment such as sewing machining back in the UK. And the way that prices are going in the Far East and the way that things are changing, who knows what may happen? And you may find out on Tuesday night when you watch the programme that that there's still hope for us yet.
It's surprising to me that you struggle to find machinists, because Mike Baldwin's factory never seems to have a problem in Corrie, but, you know, that's another story, obviously. Much better television programme, Corrie, as well, I've found. But anyway, final point on this, because it is serious, I think, for the business community out there. Tory government, Lib Dem government, been in power now for 2 years, making a big song and dance about apprenticeships, but I still sense that there is a gap between what we need in terms of workforce and what kids, students are actually being educated for. How long do you think it's going to take us to actually get round to recognising that actually business and the education institutions in this country need to come together far more closely and work far more collaboratively in the future than they have done in the past?
Well, things are starting to happen. You know, as you're aware, the number of apprenticeships has gone up significantly by 80%, and that is a start. But we do need to work much more closely together. So, unfortunately, some of the filming that didn't actually make the cut that ended up on the director's floor, unfortunately, on the cutting room floor, including some stuff with yourself, Frank, unfortunately.
That's not surprising, really.
But you still made the front cover of Man About Town, don't worry, you're not doing that badly. But we did a lot of work with the Liverpool Community College, and unfortunately that whole scene didn't make it for different reasons. But it's interesting to see that there are lots of different ways that we can actually look at training, whether more is done in schools, more is done in third parties and colleges, or whether it's actually done in the workplace. And the programme itself looks at the different options and looks at the different opportunities, and it will take time. It's not going to happen overnight, but the important thing is that people, if they're not going to go to if they're not particularly academic, if they're not going to go to university, they need to have some good options and need to be able to start with employers, look to get more apprentices and other kind of skills and training, and hopefully the programme will inspire a few other employers in the area to maybe give some of our youngsters a chance.
Sure. Well, if recruitment is an issue, then access to finance certainly is. And although we keep being told that the banks are open for business, I think, again, most of the SME market will tell you that actually the story on the ground is very different. And again, what I wonder is whether or not the UK as a country, and certainly as a business community, needs to start to learn alternative ways of financing their business, because elsewhere, United States being a prime example, then the banks are probably one of the last ports of call, particularly if you're a small enterprise trying to start out. And what they tend to get into, by and large, are VCs, venture capitalists, or some seed funding, where somebody will take a stake in your business. And we're joined today by Andy Leach, who runs the Northwest Fund, a very successful fund that's been established to do that very thing. Welcome, Andy.
Good morning, Frank.
Just tell us a bit more about the Northwest Fund, if you would.
Yeah, sure. We're a £185 million investment fund. We're targeting SMEs that are looking to grow, take on jobs and, create employment, take on some of the young people in the community. And we're really focused at investing between £50,000 at the low end up to £2 million. Business is based in the Northwest, but really with the agenda of promoting growth. And I like to think we're kind of hopefully going to help de-risk our regional economy as we create a number of thriving, successful, smaller businesses that will grow over the coming years.
Now, this fund was established by the last government, if my memory serves me correctly, and it's sort of continued to progress. It was the North West Development Agency, wasn't it?
Yeah, they were the sponsors. I mean, the funding has come out of a European programme supported by the European Investment Bank, but it was the old RDA, which is now no longer in existence, that sponsored this. But it's out of the RDF funding, yeah.
Yeah, and therefore people may look at this and say, oh great, free money. But it's not free money, is it? Because you've actually got to produce... rightly, in my opinion, you know, decent business plan. And then there's potential for you guys to look at equity options and that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's not free money. It is a commercial investment fund. And, you know, I've been in the investment community for 20-odd years now. And I think actually that businesses that do take on commercial investment and are successful end up being much more successful and enduring businesses than those that potentially in the past might have survived on grant funding. No, we're not grant funding. We are here to support businesses with either debt or in the majority of cases, equity investment to help them take the opportunities that they see to realise their ambition. And, you know, that might be a small business that's growing from one employee up to 10, 20, 30, 40, or maybe an established business which has been around for a long, long time but has an opportunity now in the current climate, and they do exist, to grow its business.
Mm. What would you say the advantages are in terms of taking funding from a pot such as North West Fund in comparison to going to your bank?
Yeah, well, firstly, I think, you know, if you are a very young business, in particular startup business, I don't think the banks should be funding startup businesses. You know, it is far too risky for a bank to be lending as part of its traditional lending business. But I think, you know, what you get with an equity investment as opposed to a debt investment, you get a far more patient investor, somebody who's prepared to wait. We certainly know, and I know from my experience, that with a lot of smaller businesses, and I've said this before with people I've backed, you know, it was a great ride, but it wasn't the one I signed up for. You know, you do need to be able to move and move around, roll with the punches to move things on in a different direction as the market changes. And markets are changing a lot quicker these days than they certainly were when I started work. So you need an equity investor alongside you. Banks can't do that. Banks have a plan. And if you don't stick to the plan, then you're in the bad book. So you do need somebody who's more patient. Equity investment also, it comes with more than just the money. And maybe some people don't want more than just the money, but it comes with experience, expertise in kind of growing businesses and also in particular sectors that will have networks and people they can bring to help to grow that business. Horses for courses, isn't it? And, you know, a lot of people say, well, why would I take equity because I'm giving something away? Well, I think if you think by taking, let's say, £200,000 of equity, you're not creating more than £200,000 worth of value in your business, you shouldn't be doing it anyway. Mm. So it's all about making the cake bigger.
Yeah. And interesting point that you made before as well, Andy, in that there are businesses out there who are growing. Mm. And I noticed from a recent announcement from North West Fund, you've had one of your best quarters. In fact, your record quarter, I think I'm right.
It's only our fifth quarter, so let's put it into perspective. But it is. And yeah, it's always about growing momentum. You know, we started from a standing start, so we had to get ourselves known in the marketplace and get ourselves established. So no, we invested £10 million last quarter, or there or thereabouts. We're hoping this quarter will be even more. And to date, we've invested £24 million supporting 93 businesses. And we expect that those businesses will probably require a further £20 million of funding from us as they grow, hit their own milestones, hit their own objectives and require further funding. Mm.
Which is all great news for the region, of course. And if people are interested in looking at the fund, where do they go?
Yeah, well, we've got a website which is www.thenorthwestfund.co.uk. All the information's on there.
There are other equity financiers out there as well. And, of course, the banks, some of them, are open for business, particularly if you've been with them for a considerable amount of time. And as Andy said, if you've been established for some time, then perhaps the banks are the obvious place to talk to, but North West Fund and others are out there to help as well, and certainly we've directed a few people your way They're going through the process at the moment. Okay, well, listen, after the break, we'll find out what's been happening on the political front in the Merseyside region. Stay with us. We'll be back in a moment.
Downtown Liverpool in business with Frank McKenna. City Talk 105.9.
And welcome back to the programme. I'm joined in the studio this week by Andy Leach from the North West Fund, Cushion King himself, Tony Caldera, and our regular political commentator and downtown blogger, Jim Hancock. We're going to look at, in a moment, Jim, at the implications of the election results from last Thursday. But I know that you were involved in the launch of the North West Fund in terms of its presentation and so on. So heartening to hear that initiative.
Yeah, a very, very minor role. I was asked to sort of host the launch of it. And it's just good to see the figures that you referred to just now beginning to come in. And Andy said at the time of the launch that Merseyside, or the Liverpool City region, as you prefer to call it, was going to be a big target for 40% of the funding. So people really should pay attention to the work that Andy and the six sector people, we haven't had time to go into that today, but there are obviously six sectors of this fund, should go in for. But then my friend, Mr. Caldera, I mean, 8 o'clock on BBC Two at night on a Tuesday, it's a prime time slot, and many congratulations to him. I was just wondering, the thing about business on television has been it was always a challenge to make it interesting. We've obviously got Dragon's Den and Apprentice and so on, but the thing about the programme on Tuesday which struck me was that he was a guy actually who'd done it and also had the ability to present the television programme. And hopefully, you know, the idea is that more and more people don't get frightened of business, and that's the purpose of these sort of programmes.
Well, do you know what was interesting for me? We went to, talking about this on last week's programme, we went to New York, Victoria and I, for nearly enough a week. And the television is full of business programmes. And it's just incredible that they absolutely lap it up, the Yanks. So everywhere you go, there's business channels on, you know, in bars.
But are they entertaining programmes or just sort of talking heads?
I think both. Yeah. You know, I think it's more along the lines of those people are actually used to seeing business leaders on the box talking about business issues. Mm. And the other thing that was very striking, and I say this today with four guys in the studio, but the number of women, you know, CEOs of major companies and business owners that are actually presenting those programmes. Mm. So, you know, there's an awful lot that we can perhaps criticise America for, but in terms of business...
But what we're trying to do is to enthuse young people in the Liverpool City region to get involved in business. And I think, I mean, Tony is a relatively young man, you know, so people can identify with him and
Mr. Hancock, thank you.
Did you have any, when you say some of it hit the cutting room floor, I mean, were you involved in some of the editorial?
Yeah, he said anything with McKenna in.
I don't want McKenna's boat race on it. That if he thinks he's getting onto my show, he can stick with Man About Town. No, jokes aside, what was great is that we were involved in some of the the stage setting almost. When we first started to shoot the documentary, they wanted to know what was going on in the next few months. And as you'll see, hopefully, if you tune in on Tuesday at 8 o'clock on BBC Two, sorry for another plug, Frank, but I've got to do it.
It's all right,
we'll
cut that out.
Yeah, thanks. But you'll see that, you know, it shows Caldera selling its products around the world, as well as taking on people in the local area. But it asks a lot of questions. You know, can we manufacture our way out of the downturn? Can we export our way out of the downturn? What's going on with globalization? Have we got the skill base? As well as it being lightly entertaining, there's some really significant questions being asked by the program, and that's why the BBC was so excited about it and gave it such a good slot.
Yeah, well, in a week when, you know, the European landscape is darkened, certainly from a business point of view. I mean, the Greeks can't form a government at all. Hollande has got a different agenda in France, which may or may not be business-friendly. So going to the BRIC countries, the Far East and India and Brazil, that may have to be the way forward.
Well, it is an interesting programme, and Tony, I have to say, comes across very well on it, although I did say
that hurt
to him
that, didn't
the day
it,
after.
When you said that, that really hurt. Did you see his face? It's really hurting him saying that, isn't it?
James, remember the days that you were on the TV? It wasn't that long ago. I mean, we did have colour. I don't think.
Colour from me or from the tube?
I don't think we had channel.
We warned you about this,
We
warned you that it might descend into farce by the time we finished.
We didn't have Channel 5, but we had colour. But the thing I always felt Jim, that you looked remarkably fit and well. I said to Tony, I know a camera's supposed to put £10 on you. How many cameras did they have on him?
Stop
this now. Because he looked like a whale. But anyway, moving swiftly on, because he certainly, Mr. Caldeira didn't look svelte like on the TV, and he wasn't particularly fast in getting to the top of that mayoral poll, was he? I think he finished 7th out of 10 candidates. But on a serious note, Joe Anderson's election, not unexpected, and I think it was more a coronation than an election in the end. They were weighing his vote rather than counting them. I think his majority was nearly enough, 60,000. Manchester opted not to have an elected mayor. Birmingham, Leeds, likewise. Other core cities opted out as well. I think the idea that the Tories had was that we'd have a selection of mayors from across the core cities who would come together and form almost a cabinet of core city leaders that would then almost consult with, talk on a regular basis to the Prime Minister. Where does this leave that strategy from a national perspective, if we take that first of all?
Yeah, well, it's certainly disappointing from Greg Clark's point of view, who incidentally I think is one of the more promising members of the government. He threw his weight behind this. But what we're left with is a sort of rather random scattering of towns and cities with mayors: Middlesbrough, Bristol, Liverpool. But from what Greg Clark was saying at the end of the week, it's perfectly clear that he does intend to back Joe Anderson. There's talk of somehow transport powers. I mean, he sort of said they'd have to have the agreement of all the other parts of the Liverpool City region, and good luck, Joe, with that. But, you know, it does look as if the government do intend, certainly for the time being, to continue to back it. But it isn't that collective mass. You know, there hasn't been, and I think Lord Heseltine sounded very disappointed that, you know, he saw this was the opportunity to really transform local government. And I'm not trying to put words in his mouth, but, you know, I think he will conclude that people seem to be sort of settling for the same old in most of the cities.
Were you surprised by that?
The no vote? Mm. Not really, because the key thing was that the powers were never made clear. And, well, I mean, two things. I mean, first of all, I think the whole thing should have been city-region mayors. And with defined powers, and I'm not a great fan of putting these things to referendums. I know it sounds terribly elitist anyway, but the public generally don't want to be involved in constitutional issues, and they don't pay enough attention to it. And when they're asked these things, they usually lash out at the government and vote no. We saw that with regional assemblies, yeah. We saw it with AV, now we've seen it with mayors. It's a, you know, so we elect governments, and if they're committed to elected mayors, I mean, they probably weren't in this manifesto, then they just get on with it. And you can say it's being imposed and so on, but income tax is imposed, you know.
Well, everything's imposed.
Everything's imposed.
The local government
structure
that we've got in place, nobody in the right mind would, you know, implement what we've got at the moment. I mean, it is just absolutely lunacy. You know, if you brought someone in, a Democrat, and said, well, this is how we operate local government in this country at the moment, they'd look at us and say, well, that's
I mean, let's just look at the Northwest picture. You have three authorities in Cheshire, 14 in Lancashire. You've got unitary councils in Blackburn and Blackpool. You've got an elected mayor in Liverpool, but not in Manchester. I mean, you're absolutely right.
Oh, it's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. But also, the interesting point that you made there about Greg Clark wanting to give some power over transport to the elected mayor in Liverpool, which makes perfect sense if the mayor is responsible for economic development, because the point that we've banged on about for a while now is how can you do economic development without the strategic powers over things like transport? Now, all the Merseyside councils are Labour-controlled, so it's going to be easy for Joe to negotiate those extra powers, isn't it?
Is it? I don't think one thing follows from the other. I mean, Mary Rimmer has been in place in... I mean, let's be frank about it. And this emerged on... I was doing a programme on election night, and I made sure that I closely questioned all the people as they came up on the microphone and asked them about this. And it's quite clear that St Helens in particular, and Wirral to some extent, Sefton I think are more liable to go along with it, and probably Ronnie Round in Knowsley is probably up for it. But St Helens is a Labour authority, but is powerfully against this city-region collaboration. And so I don't think the fact we've now got, for the first time in history, by the way, I mean, this was history was made when Labour took full control of SEFTA. We've got all the boroughs under Labour control. I don't necessarily think it may do, but it doesn't necessarily follow that it'll be easier.
And I suppose the hope that Greg Clark has, and certainly that those who support city region mayors have, and I would include myself in that, and I know Tony, who I'll speak to in a moment, is an advocate as well. We would be hoping that Joe demonstrates an ability in his four-year term to actually cut through some of the red tape and bureaucracy that Liverpool City Council has often been associated with and start to deliver some wins in order that people in those other parts of the Liverpool City region say, we wouldn't mind a bit of that as well, and almost overcome the political opposition. And when I say political opposition, it's usually from people who have a vested interest. And that's not just in St Helens. That's, you can go to, you talked about Lancashire's absolute madness of a setup there, and that's all to do with the local politicians having their own vested
interest. Just a brief word, because I do want to hear also what Tony's got to say about this, but the danger is now that, and we've sort of seen it in the Queen's speech, is that there's such an aversion to fiddling around with political structures and stuff, you know, because this pressure is on, do something about the economy, don't, you know, constitutional stuff is a low priority. I just wonder when any minister is going to get the legislative space to actually address any of these issues.
But Tony?
Well, again, you know, Greg Clark came up in the week of the election to support my campaign, and also on a fact-finding mission as well to see what the appetite was like in the city and in you know, the city region for the campaign and how it was going. And one thing that I will say is that he had an open mind and still has an open mind. He's quite confident and quite convinced, as are most of the top people who have this agenda in the government, including the Prime Minister himself, who went on the record at the event that myself and now Mayor Anderson and Richard Kemp went to at Downing Street. He said to Rob Merrick of the Liverpool Echo, and he also said to Arif Ansari of the BBC, that he believes that there should be a mayor for the Merseyside region. The Liverpool City region, you know, we need to get the name right for starters, don't we? We need to just sort that out for starters. And they are convinced in Whitehall and in government and in the Conservative Party in general that would deliver the best form of governance for our region. I agree with that. Greg Clark agrees with it. The Prime Minister agrees with it. Even you agree with it, Frank. We're all on the same hymn sheet here. When the mayoral candidates were all asked the same question, do you think there should be a mayor for the city region or a mayor for the city? Every single one of them said yes, because they understand that Liverpool's the attack brand, Liverpool's what is recognised internationally, and we just have to get over all of these self-vested interests, have to get rid of all of these little NIMBY attitudes and get on with it, because the whole region will benefit from clear leadership with a mayor that has a clear mandate from the people to go forward and to take the city to the next level.
And I think the fact is, and Jim made the point, you know, waiting for local people to decide what their political arrangements are going to be is a little bit of a nonsense. And I just think we have to have a government that has the bottle. And perhaps the current administration doesn't have the authority, given that it's a negotiated settlement between two parties. But, you know, the big disappointment constitutionally for me from the last Labour government, who had huge majorities for three terms of office, was that they never pursued elected mayors or before that regional assemblies. Because as much as politicians will argue, look, you're only tinkering at the edges, constitutional reform, who cares, because actually, you know, it's the economy that matters, stupid. The fact is that public-private sector partnerships are vitally important in this country. Michael Heseltine started Liverpool's renaissance on the back of public-private sector partnerships. And unless and until we introduce a system of local government that actually helps rather than hinders that process, then I'm afraid our economies won't grow as quickly as they could. And therefore it does have an economic impact. And I think that, for me, Jim, is the important point in all of this.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I heard what Tony said, you know, that everyone's in favour of it. So it does beg the question, why didn't we just hold back a bit, do the complicated legislation to deal with the powers of Knowsley and so on, and then go forward with it as city region mayors. I think an opportunity has been lost. And as I say, I think the political climate now is driving down on the economy and so on.
Well, we'll look at what the government have said about the economy in its Queen's speech, because in the last part of the programme, that is exactly what we'll be focusing on. Stay with us. We'll be back in a sec.
Downtown Liverpool in business with Frank McKenna. City Talk 105.9.
Welcome back to the final part of today's programme, where I'm joined in the studio by political commentator, downtown blogger Jim Hancock, Andy Leach from the North West Fund, and Tony Caldera from Caldera Limited. Well, we've looked at the business of politics, really, very by and large, in the second part of the programme, but we started by looking at some of the challenges business face, and we still see that top of that agenda is access to finance. Andy, we've spoken about alternatives to banking finance, but banking reform was very much on the agenda of the Queen's speech. So what's the Chancellor hoping to do in that area?
That's a very good question. I mean, I think it's a fine line, isn't it, between, I guess, curbing some of the excesses that have probably had an impact in terms of the recession, probably not the entire cause of the recession, and allowing the banks to go on and make the best they can do of their assets, their resources, and the talents that they have. So I think it is a very fine line. I think it's the banks themselves will probably say that there will be a natural level found as they come out of this recession. Some banks will be prepared to take more risk. Others will be very much in the low risk end of the spectrum. And provided, I think, that investors know which bank they're backing and depositors know which bank that they are putting their money with, then that may well work. But it will take some time, I think, before it becomes clear what banks want to be because at the moment they're repairing their balance sheets.
Mm. Banks not necessarily going to be cooperative in all of this, though, are they?
No, I think that's right. I think, as I say, the banks would themselves say that they will find their own level and they don't need legislation to actually drive them that way. And there may be some truth in that. I mean, I think if you go back to the heady days of the 2007, and I can remember when the banks would be announcing their quarterly results, and any chief executive of a bank who didn't hit an analyst target and deliver the sorts of double-digit growth, his share price was immediately canned. So I think the stock markets themselves have got to actually take some responsibility for this and understand exactly what is expected of banks in terms of a share performance.
Mm. And it's strange, isn't it? Because if you look at the banking sector and then you look at the property market, similar problems, wasn't there? Because property was being massively overvalued. I mean, I remember being shown apartments in Liverpool and I was told they were valued at, some of them, £300,000, £400,000, and you couldn't swing a cat in them. I mean, I certainly wouldn't be able to, or wouldn't even be prepared to, pay that sort of coin. But who drives these prices? Is it the market in the city that we really don't have any real regulatory power over, or it seems that we don't? And do you think that the banks actually are just an easy target for politicians because everyone hates them at the moment? Probably the only sector that takes it more than politicians, to be fair.
Yeah, they came and took that mantle from private equity at the nick of time, I think, when private equity was getting a particular baggy. I think, it's just about excess. It's about people losing touch with reality, isn't it? And we've seen it over decades and hundreds of years in various sectors, and it was property this time round. I mean, I understand that property sector in London is still doing this. I think it was the regional markets that kind of caught that particular disease, and there maybe wasn't the sustainable demand there to maintain it.
Mm. And house prices or property investments in other parts of the world, America again, talk about the States earlier. But, toxic debt is what they're wrapping it up as, and it seems to me that literally billions of pounds were wasted in those sorts of investments. So property was certainly a cause, if not the
cause. Yeah, and I think
the banks
would say that the vast majority of their losses have been caused out of property loans, yeah, rather than fancy investing in derivatives or whatever.
Yeah. Tony, as a businessman rather than a Tory, why do you think the coalition isn't tackling red tape and bureaucracy for business enough?
I think it needs to do it faster. I think it's already made a good start. And in the Queen's speech, you have something called the Enterprise and Employment Bill, which apparently, when we get into the nitty-gritty of it and the detail, we'll look at how the government will actually reduce red tape more quickly. I think a Conservative alone government, I mean, we've had this discussion before, as you said, there's still quite a little bit of give and take. But I think the government's made it clear in the Queen's speech that tackling the deficit is the number one priority for the government. You know, ultimately, it's important that we keep interest rates low with and our strong credit rating and our fiscal credibility to make sure that we are seen as a safe haven, a shelter from the storm. Because as Andy said, there's a lot of risk in the world as well, especially in the Eurozone at the moment. And as Jim mentioned as well, with the changing government in Greece and in France, there's a lot of unknowns. There are a lot of known unknowns, as the commentators like to say. And right now, fiscal stability and a pro-business agenda, which the government is going to have to drive through. We all want to see that happen more quickly. And in my mayoral campaign, I wanted to make Liverpool the most business-friendly city in the country. And the government, in its Queen's speech, indicated that it wants to make Britain the most pro-business country that it can physically be. And that can only be a good thing. But unfortunately, we are in the economic situation that we are. We want it to happen more quickly, and the quicker we can continue to see things like corporation tax being cut further and red tape being cut further, that's got to be what the business community in the country needs right now.
Mm. I think we're at a massive crossroads, actually, politically and economically, because when you talk about bureaucracy, and it doesn't matter which political party you talk to, they'll all say they're going to cut it. And this government have been committed to one thing and one only, which is every time we introduce a new piece of legislation, we'll take a piece out. Well, quite honestly, that's nonsense, because all you're doing then is creating a new set of rules that people have to get used to. So leave things alone would be my message if that's all you're going to do. I think what we need to do is actually 10 out and no more in. But the other thing that Labour ministers always used to say to me, and I'm hearing exactly the same now from coalition ministers, is we'd love to cut some of this legislation around employment law and around some of the things that businesses get caught up in. But actually, it's Europe. It's the European Union that stops us from doing this. Now, can I ask you, Jim, where is the appetite in this country at the moment, do you think, for Europe? Do you think that actually the right of the Tory party now, with UKIP's decent performance in the local elections, actually, people even like myself who are pro-European are thinking, can we continually be prevented from progressing because of crises with the euro currency and basically getting caught up with red tape and nonsense that very often to us, talk about local government nonsense in this country, some of the rubbish that we get thrown at us as businesses because someone in Brussels has decided it's a good idea. Why should pro-Europeans like me continue to support the union?
Well, the bold constitutional issue is that when we joined the European Union and signed up for all the other acts and so on, we embedded ourselves with these regulations. I mean, by all means,
well, it's madness, Jim. I mean, basically, Germans have taken over Europe without the war.
By all means,
basically, that's what's happening. You know, when you've got the Chancellor of Germany, I'm not joking now either. You know, when Merkel can say, after the French people decide whether we like it or not, and whether we agree or we don't agree with Monsieur Hollande and his policies, the French people have elected that guy. Angela Merkel stands up and says, I don't really care what the French people
because
say.
France,
he's going to continue with what the last fella signed up for, which has just been rejected by the French people democratically.
All 27 countries removed some of their own individual sovereignty when they joined the European Union. That was the deal. And to go back to your previous question, these regulations are part of that. Now, by all means, David Cameron could embark upon a discussion with the European Commission about reducing this regulation, but of course you'd have to get the agreement of all other 27, and that's almost impossible. So, but what I find interesting is the way you're railing at things, and people are starting to rail at things. The French are railing. The Greek people have had enough of it, and UKIP expresses that sort of thing. And there is a real...
Do you think there's a danger of a breakup?
There's a danger of all sorts of things. There's a danger of growing extremism, you know, that people feel they can't break out of this and that they're not prepared to take the deficit reduction. I mean, forgive me, this ultimate fantasy that... You know, it is within the competence of the people of Europe to decide how they want to run things. Yeah. And if they want to pretend that the debts aren't there, you know, the collapse will happen, and China and Brazil and so on will prosper. I mean, when we were in Woad and in the Anglo-Saxon kingdoms and so on, Mesopotamia was the civilized country in Egypt and so on. There's nothing to say that forever Europe is going to, or even North America for that matter. But I'm not saying we're on that cusp of things. But you know, it's no good railing about the Europe. You know, the thing. This is what we signed up for. Now, you know.
Do you think it is though, Jim? Because you see, when people say that to me, and you know, I'm just about young enough to say I didn't get a vote. In fact, it was about 10 years, I think, before I would have been able to vote when we joined the Union. 73, 72. So it was Heath's government, wasn't it, that took the referendum? Did we sign up for that? Because I don't think we did. And I don't think that people who are pro-European necessarily agree with the European Union per se being able to intervene and interfere in the laws of a nation state. And that's, I think, the big fallout that people are having now. And, you know, again, as somebody who certainly flirted with us going into the euro and thought it may be a good idea, I have to say, it was the one thing Gordon Brown seems to have got right. Andy?
I mean, there's undoubtedly been what we'd call deal creep here, but, you know, it used to be called the common market, wasn't it? Now it's called the European Union. Yeah. So, you know, it has moved both in form and name quite significantly. The death of a thousand cuts, maybe, over that period. But just going back to red tape, I mean, and how do you cutting red tape? It's great, isn't it? All the political parties are absolutely agreed that we need to cut red tape for businesses, and it's a great vote winner, but you kind of suspect that it's a little bit like a sketch out of Yes Minister with Sir Humphrey ruling the roost and Jim being sent off with his tail between his... Not this Jim, Jim Hacker, with his tail between his legs. You suspect it's actually a lot more difficult to implement than it is to talk about.
Well, it does, it does seem to be something that none of them can actually implement. You know, they all start off with good intentions. But again, having looked... only briefly at the proposals around employment law and that legislation, it actually could take us into a worse position.
Are you talking now about the mother and father being off at the same time when a child is born? Because that's in the Queen's speech,
isn't it?
Well,
stuff like that, but there's also this thing about allowing ACAS to decide on any dispute between an employer and an employee. And, you know, dependent on who you speak to, ACAS's reputation is, let's say, patchy, to say the least. So if the government are relying on ACAS to come in and sort all this out for them, then I think what businesses will very clearly see is that actually this is a move to save money, stop tribunals, so on and so forth, rather than actually solving the nub of the problem, which again is a symptom of where we are at the moment, and it's where we've been heading for some time now, sadly, which is we've got this claims culture in this country, which seems to infect every aspect of our lives these days, includes the workplace.
Sure. But final word on what you're saying. You know, I mean, at the moment, UKIP do provide that opportunity for people. You know, if people want to end the regulation of Brussels, then we break away from the European Union. And UKIP are the political party that people have to vote for that to happen. I mean, I absolutely
accept that. But I think if I want to have a sensible conversation about our future in the European Union, I do, then I think actually, you know, the political leaders across Europe need to recognise that the people of Europe, and it's not just a UK thing, you've mentioned Greece, you've mentioned France, there are other countries, Spain and Portugal spring to mind, who are suggesting that actually we don't want to be dominated in terms of our economic policies and futures by Germany.
No, but
then
those southern
have that conversation.
But those southern European countries love all this regulation because it props up this sort of welfare state, feather-bedded employment market. Well,
you know, it's collapsing around them, and I think, you know, the ambition to create this huge one nation Europe, which is basically what it was, is really, you know, not going to happen. And the sooner we recognise that and have a dialogue that is, as I say, sensible, rather than having some of these people from what I still consider to be fringe parties trying to take us in a direction that wouldn't be healthy for anyone. Anyway, a programme for another day, no doubt. And we didn't get through much of the Queen's speech, but hey, we enjoyed discussing what we discussed, and I hope you enjoyed listening to it. Listen, that's...
All I will say before you go is you sound like the most Eurosceptic pro-European that I've ever
heard. Very pro-European, I'll have you know, and I'm afraid we've run out of time. That's it from me, Frank McKenna, and City Talks Business for another Sunday. Thanks to my guests, thanks to my producer, Jonathan Dean. Most of all, thank you for listening. Have a great week, and don't do anything I wouldn't do.
Downtown Liverpool in business with Frank McKenna. City Talk 105.9. Listen and log on to great music and great conversation on City Talk 105.9.